Welcome to Radio Curious. I'm Barry Vogel. On the bluffs of the village of Mendocino, overlooking the Pacific Ocean, approximately 155 miles north of San Francisco, California, the sounds of the Mendocino Music Festival are heard for 2 weeks, beginning in early July every year. The music festival features orchestra, opera, chamber, and jazz world pop music, drawing participants and listeners from around the globe. Alan Pollock is our guest in this edition of Radio Curious and has been the artistic director and conductor of the Mendocino Music Festival for the past 22 years. In this conversation, recorded from his home in Northern California on July 1st, 2008, we began when I asked him to tell us about the Mendocino Music Festival, its history, what to expect, and why.
Well, the Mendocino Music Festival is what I consider to be a very special event, a very special sort of creation. It was born 22 years ago, and it was born as an inspiring thought. Both my wife, Susan Waterfall, and I wanted to create an environment where music, beautiful music, was made, musicians were treated well, and we wanted to create a festival and an organization where artistry was really the primary thought and the primary driving concept. And we began with a concept, and we began with no physical or corporeal reality. And through a bunch of very auspicious circumstances, the Mendocino Music Festival just sort of came to life, just like in a garden, some flower or some extraordinary vegetation grows that you never expected. And when we thought of the festival originally, we didn't know where it was going to be. We didn't know who was going to who was going to play in it. We just knew that we loved really great music, and we wanted to create a place for it.
So, and how did you choose the Bluffs of Mendocino?
The Bluffs of Mendocino chose us. And I say that because we got a board together, we got people interested in the festival, and we were at a board meeting, and we were all looking at each other, and we said, geez, we don't even know where we're going to hold this thing. And the state parks called us. The guy's name was Dick Starr, and they said, would you like to hold the festival right next to the Ford House on the grounds?
So, and there was a rumor abounding that all the way to him.
Yeah, there was a rumor. And I think this is a little-known fact, we were extremely lucky, and we said, sure, we'd love to do it. And I think even the first year, it was done for free, but it was 2 decades ago, so it's hard for me to remember all the facts. And then we got, somehow or another, we rented a tent. I believe it was a blue and gold tent. It was as gaudy as it could be. And somebody from the board put together a bunch of volunteers, and they built a stage. And we got a bunch of chairs that we rented, and actually got donated. We all did it for nothing. We got what lights we could, and we got an orchestra. Some of the members were members in the San Francisco Symphony Orchestra, the ballet orchestra, the opera orchestra. Everybody came up. We had local people playing in this orchestra, and we had 8 concerts in that first festival. And I'll never forget the headlines after we pulled this thing off. It was in big black. I said, they did it, because they didn't even know we could do it. And we actually ended up in that first year. We ended up in the black. It was a complete and total miracle.
Well, let's jump ahead 22 years to July of 2008. What could a listener expect to enjoy? What kind of music?
Well, we now have 27 concerts, not 8. And we have grown into a concert series that presents an eclectic mix of music. We do still think of ourselves as a classical music festival, but there will be tons of different kinds of music. There will be orchestral music. The first night, opening night, which is on July 12th, it's an orchestra concert, and a magnificent pianist, Steve Putzman, who plays all over the country. He's a music director in many places, too. He's going to be playing the Tchaikovsky First Piano Concerto, which is a concerto that everybody knows. Fantastic, beautiful piece. We're also going to be doing Dvorak's Eighth Symphony on that concert, which is a very up-sparkling piece. And we're going to start off with the Smetana Bearded Bride Overture, which goes like the wind. It's affectionately known by musicians as the Battered Broad, but it's just a great piece. And so that's the first orchestra concert. Steve Prutzman on Monday night is going to be playing a solo concert in the tent, and it's going to be a fascinating concert because he also plays jazz and he's also a composer, very talented man. And the concert is entitled Bach and Forth, and that concert is going to, he's going to play, you know, something from the Bach, I believe, Well-Tempered Clavier, and then he's going to play another piece, something he wrote or something other contemporary that someone else wrote, and try to relate those pieces together. And so that ought to be a really interesting concert.
I remember some of these names from when one of my career goals was to do the work that you're doing, and instead I went off into the area of law. But for people who don't have a familiarity with music, when you mention these names as you just have, what can you tell us that would entice someone to come listen?
This music is, they will recognize a lot of this music because a lot of this music has been played, and they hear it in commercials, or they'll hear it, you know, by chance by turning on the radio. But this music is, people should come and hear a live orchestra, because live orchestras, a live orchestra is the greatest instrument on the planet. It is so incredibly beautiful, and to come to the festival and you get a glass of wine before you go to the concert, and you're standing on the edge of the world, literally. Got a glass of wine, looking at the Pacific Ocean, feeling that cool breeze coming at you. You walk into a tent that's comfortable, beautiful. It looks like a cathedral. You sit down. You hear the symphony orchestra tuning up, and you hear beautiful music, really, from it's a stunning sound, and it will envelop you. And you will recognize a lot of the stuff that you hear. And then you go out for intermission, and you get another glass of wine. There's stuff to eat. You talk to people, and you walk in, and you hear the end of the concert. And it's an extremely pleasurable experience, and you feel the community around you. You see that it really is a place where people know people, where it's a real event. It's not some sort of commercial, event where you don't really know anybody. You walk and you hear the music and you leave, and it's sort of indifferent to you. It's a very welcoming place. It's very warm. It's the tent is small enough. You can see the musicians play. You can see expressions on their faces. It's a special place to hear music, and classical music and orchestral music, all of this music becomes so much more personal and so much more understandable and enjoyable because it is intimate. You feel like it's being played for you. And one of the things about classical music that I've always disliked is this sense of when people have a sense of it being sort of snotty or noses in the air, and it's only for people of a particular disposition. And I used to be a jazz musician, and I started out as a jazz musician, and I came to classical music just because I loved it. And I keep trying to communicate to everybody that it really is. It is not for snobs. It's not for only, people with a special education or something like that. It's just gorgeous stuff. And I'm trying to share it, and I'm trying to let people know that the musicians are just rough, tough people just like the rest of us, trying to make a living, and they have their ups, their downs, and somehow or another, the Mendocino Music Festival communicates this so beautifully. And when music is personalized, when you get to see that it's real people making this music, it somehow or another just makes it more, you can grasp it more, you can feel it more, you can feel less intimidated by it. You can just really see that it's real.
Well, Alan, I want to tell our listeners that in this edition of Radio Curious, we're talking with Alan Pollock. He is a composer and a conductor and the director of the Mendocino Music Festival. And you're listening to Radio Curious. I'm Barry Vogel. Alan, standing on the podium with your back to the audience, facing the orchestra, conducting the orchestra, what do you do? What is that like? What are your tasks, the scope of the assignment?
The position, I used to, when I was younger and when I was a jazz musician, I used to have a tremendous amount of contempt for conducting. I mean, I felt that it was, I don't like fascism, and it always seemed to me as though you had this person up there that was telling everybody what to do and everybody had to obey. And when I started conducting, I didn't really choose it. I was not interested in conducting. I just sort of fell into it. It was something it became apparent I could do. And I can answer your question only because I have learned over the years that it is a very subtle art, and the kinds of skills that go into being a good conductor are very subtle. And I sometimes even think musicians that are not conductors don't really understand what goes into it.
What are those skills?
Well, the skills are musical and they're psychological. And you have to be very adept at both of them. The psychological skill is always in play and is always difficult, because my philosophy is that people play their best when they're supported. And so you have to create a situation in which the musician can blossom. So you don't want to micromanage that musician. You do not want to make comments when you're trying to get the ensemble to play better. You don't want to make any kind of comments that are negative. You want to make sure that everything is really positive, so that when people play, they're putting their best forward, that they're trying to be their most creative. They feel that they are really what they should be, which is a creative contributing member to the final sound. And those are the kinds of skills that you don't learn in school. Those are the kind of skills that you only learn on the job.
And well, how do you, as the conductor, draw that out of a member of the orchestra? A full orchestra has 100 people in it. So how are you able to reach to each of them?
Well, two ways. First of all comments are positive. You have to put you when a person gets up in front of an orchestra, they are no longer themselves. They are no longer an individual. You are a person that is in the role of responsibility, and so you make sure every comment you make, whether or not you're up in front of the orchestra or you are talking to orchestra members during breaks, you make sure that you are always kind, you're always respectful. And then implicit, you know, there's more than just speech. You know, there's other kinds of language.
The eye contact,
eye contact,
arm gestures.
Physical, yeah. I mean, as far as eye contact is concerned, I make sure that when someone is playing the solo, I don't look at them. I make sure I look away. I take care of other business. So while they're playing, they've got it. They've got it. They know they're it, and I'm not sitting there being critical, that they get to do what they have to do in whatever way they need to do it. I remember seeing Leonard Bernstein conduct the Israeli Philharmonic in Mahler's Ninth, and in the very first movement, the flutist screwed up. And I was sitting behind the orchestra, I was sitting in the terrace, and he spent the rest of that concert, which was a long concert, staring at the flutist. And I thought, what are you doing? You are just, you know, you're just making that flutist so uncomfortable. And that, to me, is a, you know, Bernstein was a great conductor, but I'm only using that as an example, that you've got to really keep it together and let people be who they are.
Well, from the point of view of someone who would sit behind you in the audience, watching you conduct an orchestra, what should we look for?
Well, you can't see me. You can only see me. You can only see me. You can see my gestures, and you can see through my body. You can get ideas of what some of the emotional import of the music is. But you can see the orchestra, and you can see whether or not they're smiling. You can see whether or not they're really into it, whether or not they're enjoying it, whether or not they're intense. And that stuff is very strongly communicated visually.
From the point of view of the listener in a symphony, there's the overture, there are the various sections, and then the finale. Can you tell us how an orchestral piece is prepared by the composer to bring these sounds together?
By the composer.
Well, or by the conductor.
Those are two very, very different processes. As far as the composer is concerned, talking about composing in the modern environment is an extremely complicated and deep subject. I actually got a degree in composition. I'm supposed to have a PhD in composition. And I wrote a lot when I was young. And when you compose, the creative process itself is very personal, very private, and also consists of two components, just like conducting, a cultural, psychological component, and then, of course, the component of craft. And I think that nowadays, more than ever, the biggest problem is not how you write, but what you write. And to sit down and make those original choices of what kind of music you are going to write is just tremendously challenging. And I'm not going to pretend that my feelings about where composition has gone over the last 50 years or even longer is problematical. I will not deny that. I think classical music itself is suffering terribly because of a disconnect between the audience and what the composers are writing.
Let's talk about that. By saying that, I hear an implication that at one point there was a solid connection, and now it's becoming a disconnection. When we look at those solid connections and we look at the famous orchestral pieces that are played by symphonies throughout the world, wouldn't it be fair to say that they were written sporadically over a several hundred year period?
Sort of. I mean, there's a pretty strong continuity, from Haydn to, the end of the 19th century and maybe the first decade or so of the 20th century.
So when there's a disconnect, would that be a lull, or can you connect or relate what you characterize as a disconnect to something else going on in the larger society or in the larger world?
Well, oh my goodness, Barry, you asked some pretty big questions, and
This is Radio Curious.
Yeah, Radio Curious, and I'm going to try and answer it as clearly as I can, and with the caveat that this is my point of view, and I don't know if I really understand things as well as I should. But to me, the biggest difference is that from the time of Haydn and to the end of the 19th century in Europe, there was actually a bed. There was a tradition that people could relate to. I mean, there was a musical style. There was a musical. There were even musical forms that everybody expected. Probably the most prevalent was the sonata form, we would recognize it today in pop music, sort of the kind of form of, verse and refrain. And usually, it's verse, refrain, verse, it's called an AABA form, and it's very related to the European form. And when you would get innovations in Europe, I mean, this is European music that we're doing. It is European music that we're doing. When there were innovations like Beethoven's Ninth, which we're doing at the end of the festival, they were innovations, and they were conceived as something that was slightly different than what was expected. And of course, it's an artist is always trying to push the limits, but when there's a context. It's quite a bit different than the scene that we have today, where there is nothing but innovation, and there's nothing to relate it to. So we have all these compositions that are all experimental. Every composer probably would love to have his or her own language, if it were possible. And I'm afraid that it has gotten to a point where it's very difficult, not only for audiences, but many times the musicians themselves, to relate to a lot of these compositions. And because of it, I believe that the classical world has, and I think this happened in jazz too, the classical world has sort of distanced itself, and it's from a lot of people that could be receptive to this gorgeous music, this gorgeous instrument, and so I think that it's really problematical. And to me, as I get older, I've just hit my 60th birthday a few months ago. To me, I'm beginning to realize in all things that moderation is the way to go. In other words, you don't want to have music that's the same old, because it gets boring. So there would be no innovation, and you don't want to have music that is completely innovative, because then you can't relate to it. I think that for me, the greatest stuff, the stuff that I like, is music that is moderate, that it has that middle ground where you can hear it, you can understand its context. It's got stuff from the past, and it also has some new stuff that jazzes you because it's new.
Well, that brings me to my next question, and that's the effect of music on the human condition. Since music, some say, has been around longer than spoken language.
I don't know if I believe that. That to me seems to be a conjecture that is not provable. I'm absolutely not an authority on the subject, but I have a very strong sense of skepticism for so many things that are said, and I have no idea myself whether or not that's true. I can say this, that there have been moments when I have failed to understand the evolutionary significance of music. I don't know why we appreciate music. The level of sophistication of the human ear, of all of us, it doesn't matter whether or not you understand classical music or not. When you are a musician and you begin seeing and understanding the complexity of what people understand, whether, I mean, it can be a jazz tune, it can be a pop tune, when you understand that, there can be a compilation of 7 or 8 or 9 notes that people recognize every time, very, very, and chord progressions, whether or not they can tell you what those chords are, but you recognize them. It is a phenomenal, I mean, a phenomenal and very sophisticated ability. And then when you understand that you are taking this non-verbal oral thing that we understand, and you respond in such an intense way, to me it is completely and totally mysterious. I don't get it.
Well, Alan Pollock, composer, conductor, and director of the Mendocino Music Festival. I want to thank you for being with us on Radio Curious. And before we go, I have a couple of questions. And one is, can you tell us an important thing that you've learned recently?
I believe that what I have really learned and feel more strongly about than ever is that in order for one to lead a successful life is that one really has to understand the essence of something, the essence of what you're doing, and stick to it to no matter what, and make it happen, and to keep things simple. Just keep it simple. Understand what your goal is and make everything you do serve that goal.
And another question. Can you tell us about an interesting book that you've read lately?
Well, yes, I can. I've taken it upon myself. I don't know if you've had the experience of going into a bookstore and seeing so many books in front of you that you actually feel that you are in a sea of books. And I myself looked through them, realized my time was limited, and didn't know what to pick up. And I realized that I had not read the works of Shakespeare. And so I have taken it upon myself over the years, and I just completed the project of reading all the Shakespeare plays. And I have gotten an understanding of Shakespeare that I have never had before, the beauty of the language, an appreciation of Shakespeare that as a man, because he was just a guy, and really just a guy. Even the people that were educated, more educated than he was, they resented him. And to me, he's just one of those geniuses in literary and artistic history that is phenomenal because of his incredible insight. And I've grown to love him because I feel that Shakespeare keeps himself out of his art. It was sort of not one of these things, where there's the romantic self-expression, but almost Shakespeare almost wasn't important, and his incredible insight into human nature is something that I have really, really enjoyed. And one of the things in my profession is jealousy. And I remember reading Othello and the terrible, terrible things that Iago did to Othello, and Othello being so stupid, he went along with it. But the whole sort of exegesis of Shakespeare on the subject of jealousy, I feel, was really something that meant a lot to me. So,
well, Alan Pollack, thank you very much for being with us on Radio Curious.
Thank you, Barry. Pleasure.
Alan Pollack has been the artistic director and conductor of the Mendocino Music Festival for the past 22 years. The book he recommends is The Complete Works of William Shakespeare. This interview with Alan Pollack was recorded on July 1, 2008. Copies of this and other editions of Radio Curious can be found on our website, www.radiocurious.org. They're also available in CD format for $10 each. At Radio Curious, we appreciate your thoughts and ideas about our programming and enjoy hearing from you. Our address is Post Office Box 7, Ukiah, that's UKIAH, California, 95482. Our email address is curious@radiocurious.org. And the phone is 707-462-6541. You've been listening to Radio Curious. I'm Barry Vogel. Thank you for joining us.